Well, today, as was mentioned in the opening prayer, is the Sabbath, and that is the subject that we want to cover today. We want to cover the subject of the Sabbath because it is one of our basic beliefs, is it not? And during our summer ministerial conference up here in Lake Geneva, they gave us a three-ring binder with quite a number of basic doctrinal subjects in it, and we are trying to go through each one of those one at a time. It is extremely important for us to be well-founded in what we believe. Now, you might say, well, you can't get any more basic than the Sabbath. We all know about it because here we are, and it's important to us, and we've been doing it for 20 years, 30 years, 40 years, 50 years, for a long time. Why do we need to hear about it? Well, it does definitely say in the Bible that our faith is increased by hearing of the Word. And we do need to be grounded. And this is one of the things I personally feel God is doing at this time in the church, and that is grounding all of us and building a good solid foundation so that we know where we stand. What's so very important, if we think about the example of Christ when he talked about the house being built on the sand, being built on the rock, we want to have these things fresh in our minds and go over them. So I'm going to be using the information that they gave us with some of my own adders on to it. First of all, I just want to give you a little overview as far as I'm concerned. Regarding the Sabbath, there are basically two groups of people who keep the Sabbath. There are the Jews. I must remind you that do not accept the sacrifice of Christ at this time. And within the Jewish religion, there are basically four levels. You have the extreme Jewish groups that would, you know, they have all of the do's and the don'ts, and they only can take so many steps on the Sabbath. That it gets to be very, very complicated. Okay, so that's the far extreme. And then it begins to move up, becoming more and more liberal to the reformed Jewish people who basically don't do anything. They may go to the synagogue on the Sabbath, Friday night, so they don't ruin their Saturday. They don't restrain themselves from working on the Sabbath or any of these other things. It's more of a social, Jewish, traditional type of thing. And that's how they keep it. That would be the extreme. Well, of course, then there's the other group who renounced their religion totally. I worked with it was a man I was representing. He was a teacher or a professor at IIT here in Chicago. A very smart engineer, scientist, doctor, and he was Jewish, but he chose not to practice anything. And I would kid him all the time when he found out that I was going to attend church for whatever reason, or that I was keeping these holy days, and then I would just look at him and say, well, now you ought to be doing that too. And he'd just kind of laugh, and that was about it. He did nothing. So that's the range of that group of people who keep the Sabbath. Then there's the other group. There are Christians who keep the Sabbath. And basically, you have the Seventh-day Adventist Church. I mean, I'm sure there are other little groups as well that I won't be able to mention here because we're not sure sometimes where these groups of people that God's working with are. And we discover them many times to our surprise. There's the Church of God. There is actually the what was called the Seventh-day Baptist group, which kind of descended from the people there in Rhode Island. And when we were out on the East Coast, we went to, I always forget the name of the city in Rhode Island, where the original Sabbath keepers established their church. We went to the Sabbatarian church there, I'm not quite old enough to be the church pastor in the Sabbatarian church, because you had to be 70 or 71 years old in order to be the pastor of their church. So I'm a little young. But that was there for whatever reason, their tradition and their set of rules. What surprised me very, very much was there was a migration from that area of Rhode Island on down through New Jersey and down into Philadelphia. Now, Philadelphia was a gateway, I learned, for the major religions of this country to come into this country. It was the gateway that opened up for the Catholic Church to be able to enter this country. There was great resentment against the Catholic religion, but the city of Philadelphia was controlled by the Quakers, not the Puritans. The Puritans were up in Boston. They didn't like the Quakers very much, and they hung four of them up there in Boston. And anyway, I learned all about that because we were meeting in a Quaker meeting hall, one of the biggest ones in the world, actually, which was almost 200 years old there in Philadelphia. But anyway, I found that that the Quakers were very, very open-minded, and they allowed all these different religions to pass through Philadelphia, which was donated to them by William Penn, who was also a Quaker. And it was rather interesting, because the people of Philadelphia wanted to burn down the first Catholic church, and the Quakers marched around that church to protect it and to keep it from being destroyed. They were also the ones who instituted prisons. Rather, they didn't believe in killing anyone. They didn't believe in the death penalty. They don't believe in going to war. And so they came up with the idea of putting people in prison rather than executing people or doing other things. They also were the instituters of some very nice and very effective mental health institutions, and they still maintain some of the nicest ones there in the Philadelphia area. But much to my surprise, while in Philadelphia, I contacted a number of people who were in little groups, 25, 30 people, who had been keeping the Sabbath and the holy days, irrespective of the Worldwide Church of God or the Seventh-day Adventist, and they were longtime descendants from those original people up in Rhode Island as they worked their way down. I was driving northern New Jersey past on this one road, and I saw this sign in this little tiny cemetery, Seventh-day Baptist Cemetery. And I was like, whoa. I turned around and went back. It wasn't in too good a shape. I did some checking. But here were these little tracks of history as they worked their way down towards the Philadelphia area. I ran into three groups that kept all the holy days, kept the Passover. One man called me. His whole little group of 25, 30 people have been doing this for many, many years. The whole group was going to go up to Niagara Falls, and it didn't look like he was going to be able to do that. And he was looking for someone to keep the Passover with. And so he called me because he knew we'd kept it, and he began to go down the line in questioning, okay, what do you do first? You do this and this. And, no, we do this first, and then we do this, or we do it this way, or whatever. It was just a little technicality, but they were very strict in their tradition of observance. And evidently he was able to go up to Niagara Falls because I didn't hear anything back from him. But this was a very surprising to me, and then I found out when you read the autobiography that Mr. Armstrong did contact a man and a woman back in the Philadelphia era when he came to understand the holy days. Somehow he felt or found out that they were keeping them, which was now no surprise to me, because these little remnants were back there, and they didn't ever have any association with our group at all, and were doing it for many, many years. So that was pretty eye-opening. So it's a situation where there are probably more people who understand the Sabbath than we realize throughout the world. Remember, over in Eastern Europe, They were praying for someone. Mr. Victor Kubik was involved in that, praying for someone to come and share the truth with them, because they were sneaking around trying to keep the Sabbath in different areas and or different homes and so on, and they were under scrutiny, and they could have gotten, they could have disappeared to the gulag somewhere, and so they were doing it in secret and had no idea anybody else was keeping it or doing it. And eventually they came in contact with our organization and Mr. Kubik and so on. So that those are things that surprised us. Remember the prophet who didn't know that there were 6,000 people who hadn't bowed the knee to Baal? And he was like, wow, he thought he was the only one. So we don't know exactly what God is doing, and I think we'll be surprised someday to find out. There is another group here in Chicago, a black group on the south side of Chicago that Bill Bradford, this was about 10 years ago, they had a program on the local TV. I can't remember the name of their organization, but they had about close to 1,000 people who had been keeping the holy days, and they were on the local TV station proclaiming, what they believed and so on. I don't know if they're still on or not, but he happened to see that. He called them, and they had never had any association with the Worldwide Church of God or anything else in the past. And so this is something that they kept the holy days, they kept the Feast of Tabernacles, they kept the Sabbath, and I assume that they are continuing to this day. I don't know what has transpired over the last 10 years. So, and there was another group there in up in New Jersey who had moved there. Well, it was a black minister down in Georgia or Alabama who had heard Mr. Armstrong back in the late 30s or early 40s. He incorporated the Sabbath, the holy days, and various other things into his church and continued to maintain his own congregation and organization. And then one of their families moved up to the New Jersey area, northern New Jersey, Newark area, and he was then like a satellite minister for this small family group. And finally they came to understand about the Worldwide Church of God, and they became members of the church there. And it's kind of an interesting long story, but I won't bore you with all that. But it was kind of fascinating to find out what the history was and how that all worked. It was just quite interesting. Okay, so there are people in the world who keep the Sabbath, but not very many. We are unique. And the Christians, of course, are the only ones following Christ's example, because the Jewish viewpoint doesn't accept Christ at this point. They're waiting. They're still waiting for their Messiah to come back. All right, we have reviewed this in times past, what I call the simple proof of the Sabbath day. First of all, in Genesis, the second chapter, I won't read this, but I'll just refer to it. In Genesis 2 and verse 1, the great God who created the world and created us, when he was finished with his creation on this earth, he rested, and he set that day aside. He set it aside for us. He created, in essence, the Sabbath day, that particular special time, and later fleshed out very clearly that we were to observe that day as well, and that we should absolutely put aside our normal activities and focus on him. Then he reiterated, he did reiterate it in the Ten Commandments. He did it, and as we'll see, in other places prior to that. But in the Ten Commandments, he talked about it in the Fourth Commandment, and he specifically tells us in the Fourth Commandment, and this is very important, brethren, to remember, because people like the lump. They try to put the Ten Commandments under the Old Covenant, and they just do away with everything. They just kind of wash it all away, and the Sabbath goes away, and you don't have to do anything. It's really ridiculous, but all they have to do is read the Fourth Commandment, and it tells you that the Sabbath was not instituted on Mount Sinai. It tells you when it was. For in 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth and all of them and so on. And then he rested on the seventh day. So it did not take place on Mount Sinai. It was reiterated and expounded and clarified there. Very, very simple. And then finally, the third very simple scripture is Mark, the second chapter, which is Christ's explanation, because the Pharisees, again, these were the extreme people that added all the do's and don'ts, which God does not have in keeping the Sabbath. And this is one of the things that make the Sabbath a burden, which God never created it to be. He did it and gave it to us for a joy, for a rest, for a separation from the world, to give us freedom from the everyday mess that we're faced with every single day and all the things out there in the world. Give us temporary separation from that. And so as a result, Christ and his disciples were being criticized, and Christ said, look, the Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. So God, it goes all right back to creation, Genesis 2nd chapter, verse 1, that God made the Sabbath for us. Now, if God went out of his way to make the Sabbath, it is only logical, if we are following Jesus Christ, and Christ kept the Sabbath, Christ said that he was the Lord of the Sabbath, and that it was made for us, well, of course, if we're trying to follow God, we would do that. Because if God went out of his way to make the Sabbath for us, then it's only logical that we would keep it. And, I mean, you can go at it from the other point of view, that God commands us to keep it, which he does, and that's obviously pretty important. But from just a simplistic, logical point of view, if God went out of his way to set that day aside and to preserve, as we'll see, the seven-day cycle, which he has for the thousands and thousands of years, of course a Christian would do it. The disciples did it. Christ did it, and they continued to do it after Christ was sacrificed and resurrected. Okay, let me read a statement from this fundamental belief statement. It says, we believe that the seventh day of the week is the Sabbath of the Lord our God. Now, there will be people who will dispute that with you. They will say that we've lost the seven-day cycle and so on. But all you have to do is remember, Christ knew which day the Sabbath was, okay? And that was 2,000 years ago, and we have a clear, accurate record from that time forward. His disciples knew. Mary Magdalene knew, and there are scriptures I'll point you to, when they specifically say such and such was the Sabbath or the seventh day of the week, and then the first day of the week, so-and-so, such-and-such happened. There is no question. That's always been preserved, okay? So we believe that the Sabbath is on the seventh day of the week. Some people will say, well, that is, if you think you have to, and I've said this to you many times, if you think that you have to keep that day from sunset to sunset, then you are guilty of trying to earn salvation. Now, keeping the Sabbath, brethren, will not earn you salvation. And there's no place in the Bible that I know of that says that if you keep the Sabbath, that's going to guarantee you the salvation. Certainly, someone keeping the Sabbath who doesn't even believe in Christ has some more to learn before they would get to that point. It's a situation here where we aren't keeping it to earn salvation. We are keeping it because God made it for us and because we need it. We need it. We need it desperately. And that's the reason he created it for us and why he set aside the holy days. And anybody who's been keeping it for any length of time and who understands it and has experienced the benefits of the Sabbath looks forward to when that sun goes down, because you can divest yourself of the worries of the world for at least 24 hours, and then you have to go back. Then we also believe that the Sabbath is of the Lord our God. In other words, that it is something that Jesus Christ is the Lord of. On this day, we are commanded to rest from our labors and worship God, excuse me. And also, then that's why we have church, as the Bible refers to the fact that there's a commanded assembly, if at all possible, unless there's a snowstorm or whatever. And then, and I'm not saying that because the Beloit Church thought they were more righteous than Chicago. That was not the case. We were just a little dumber than that's all. But anyway, thankfully nobody got hurt. But nonetheless, it is something that God's given to us. And the following, then it goes on to make the statement that the following teachings, which we're going to review, and examples of Jesus and also the apostles of the New Testament. So Christ's teaching plus the fact of his personal example and what he did, and he said we should follow in his footsteps. People will say, oh no, Christ was just doing that because that was a tradition, but once he was crucified, all that went away. That all got nailed to the cross, and then we forget it. And somehow the apostles missed that point. They didn't get it. And then the apostles continue to follow Christ's example. Okay, so this is broken down a little bit different way than maybe I would do it, but I'm going to try to kind of follow their outline here. So, to support point number one, that we believe that the Sabbath is the seventh day of the week, I've already referred to Genesis, and I'm not going to read all these scriptures. We'll get into some later. Genesis, the second chapter, once again, in verses 1 through 4. And as they say here, it is not merely one day in seven, but the seventh day. Now, some people will say that you don't have to keep the seventh day, you just have to keep one day in seven. Some people will say, well, I keep every day like the Sabbath. Well, that's interesting. Those who believe that we are trying to earn salvation believe that they need to do church once a week. That means you go to church, you sit there for 2 hours or whatever happens, and then you've done church. Now, you can do church any day of the week. Doesn't make any difference because we aren't locked in to a specific day. You just want to do church. And you can do it on Wednesday, Friday, Monday. Doesn't really make any difference. And in fact, if you think that you have to do it at a specific time, then you're back to trying to earn salvation. This was the theory and the thinking of those in the past that we're no longer associated with. But nonetheless, that was what they concluded. All right, in Matthew 28 and verse 1, it makes a reference about the weekly cycle. And that was what I was just mentioning to you. Also, in Luke 23, the last verse, and then 24, the first verse, is what I was referring to as far as Mary Magdalene knowing that it was the Sabbath, and then verse 1 of chapter 24, she refers to the first day of the week, which was the next day. So she knew what day was the seventh day. She knew which one was the first day. That cycle, and we have a booklet called Has Time Been Lost, which goes into proving that that weekly cycle has never been broken. And God made sure it was preserved, and he preserved that through the Jews. He gave that responsibility to them, and they have preserved it worldwide, and that the Sabbath was given as a perpetual identifying sign to Israel, as we'll see in the next, or some of these other sections. Okay, so another section here is the Sabbath of the Lord our God. Did it come from God, or was it man's idea? Did someone wake up one day? Was it, maybe it was Moses or Abraham or someone who came up with the idea, let's set aside a day to observe and to worship God, and we won't work when, you know, set up all these rules. Well, in Exodus 31, and we should go there, Exodus 31 talks about the Sabbath, and it's pretty interesting. This is not where it was mentioned in the Ten Commandments, but Exodus 30, chapter 31 and verse 13, he begins to go into this subject all the way to the end of the chapter. But what's interesting here is in verse 13, he says, "Speak you to the children of Israel, saying, truly, my Sabbaths," and he pluralizes this because it includes the holy days, "you shall keep, for it is a sign between me and you throughout your generations." And what was the sign, or what was the lesson to be learned? "That you may know that I am the Lord, and that I sanctify you." So that we will remember who God is, and that we realize that he has set us apart in a special category. It's going to be a sign. You need to keep the Sabbath, not just for the benefits that it gives you, but always remembering that it helps us remember who God is, and that he has set us free from this bondage of this world. And then he's in verse 14, "And you shall keep the Sabbath therefore, for it is holy to you. Every one that defiles it shall be put to death. Whosoever does any work therein, that soul shall be cut off from among his people." Excuse me. And then he goes on to reiterate more, you know, emphasis on this. And then in verse 17 he says, "It is a sign between me and the children of Israel forever. For 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth, and on the seventh day he rested and was refreshed. And he gave to Moses when he had made an end of communing with him upon Mount Sinai two tablets of stone, and he had written, of course, the Ten Commandments in that. So, and he'd written the thing about the Sabbath. But he wanted us to understand that it was a sign, that it helped us remember who God is, and that it sets us apart in a special way. Now, that's very important in order for us to be growing and communing with God, because if you're not focusing on God, if you don't take time to refresh yourself spiritually and physically, guess what happens? You begin to forget about God. You begin to drift away. And pretty soon you wake up. Now, I've talked with some people here in this room who, for a while, when this breakup transpired back in 95, 96 area, they just didn't do anything. And they quit keeping the Sabbath, and they just weren't doing anything. And when they finally awoke and they finally realized that they were wrong, after months, sometimes it was a year or two, whatever the situation was, they couldn't believe how far they had not slipped, in the sense, but how much they needed to be refreshed and to come back, how much they had kind of forgotten. And you'll talk to some people who used to be in the church, and it's like, you know, you mentioned something, oh, we're going to the Feast of Tabernacles, and it's like, oh, yeah. I mean, it's just gone. It's hard to believe. But if you and I don't get refreshed and reminded on a weekly basis, on an annual basis, that's what happens. You stop praying and having communication with God, you will drift away from God. That's as sure as gravity. You don't have constant communication and constantly ask God for his help and more of his spirit and to give you what we need to be Christians, you will be going the other way. You aren't going to be growing, number one, and you will be going backwards. And you pretty soon you're out there. You're out there running on your own, and then before you know it, you've got all kinds of difficulties, because we can't run on our own. We need God's help every day. So this is one of the things that is so very important, that it wasn't a man's idea. This was very clearly God's invention, God's creation, not man's. And it's important that we remember that. This is an identifying sign. You can call it a badge, a marker. It identifies and illustrates, as we just read, that God is God, the self-existent one. No one created God. God has always been. And he rested, and he followed, following his work of creation. And that he is the Lord that sanctifies us. He puts us, sets us apart in a special category, because now he can work with us, can't he? Because our mind is subject to him. We're trying to follow what he gave us and to follow the rule that he set down. That's a benefit to us. And so you come to church for what reason? To learn. And your mind is open. And so as we preach out of the Bible, and as we study this, and as we expound these things, whoever may be doing it, we are learning and we're taking it in. That's an open mind to God's way, a submission to his way. Those who don't keep the Sabbath are not interested. And if you try to talk to them, and you've already tried that to your friends and relatives, and you know the result, they're not interested. In fact, not only are they not interested, then they get angry. And so you quickly learn, shut up. Just do what you know to do and let God reveal it to them at his time when that time comes. So it all works together. It has to come first from a willingness and a submission to God to even begin to keep the Sabbath, because it's not something that comes like, oh, that's logical. Yeah, I should set one day aside and stop my work and interrupt my schedule and so on, because that seems like a good idea. It isn't a logical thing necessarily for us as humans. So you have to have a bigger reason than just logic to do it. Now, this is important here. What they're saying is, obeying the Sabbath, which sets its adherents apart as a special and holy individual, obedient to the Creator God in the midst of the world of otherwise universally deceived by Satan, Revelation 12:9, God's or Satan is deceived the whole world. It is a necessary but not a sufficient proof that a person knows and is in communion with the one true God. I've already alluded to that. There are people who keep the Sabbath who don't believe in Christ. That's a problem. Is keeping the Sabbath going to give us salvation? By itself, no. It is our, it's a tool that we need, and it's one that God gives us, and if we use it, it's going to draw us closer to God and bring us closer to his kingdom and conversion and thinking the way he thinks. But it's not sufficient by itself, because people think that there are people who really do think they can earn salvation. This was the big war, if you want to use that term, that Christ had with the Pharisees, because they were of that mindset. You have to do all these things. That gives you righteousness. And if you do all these things, if you really want to be righteous, now you add more to the list. Now, believe me, brethren, people in the Church of God through the years have fallen into that trap. It's what I have termed the checklist righteousness viewpoint. If I do this and this and this, I do all these good things, I'm good. And they are trying to earn salvation. They don't even realize it, but they think that that's, you know, I remember some speeches in college, and it was this would come up every year, and I think I've shared this with you before. The guy in speech class or spokesman's club or whatever would get up, and he'd have this brilliant idea. If I can be perfect, you know, from the time I wake up, if I can be perfect for a minute, can I be perfect for 2 minutes? What about 5 minutes? What about an hour? And then they begin to project this out, that he could be perfect. Well, I'm sorry to disappoint you. You know, you may not do anything incorrect, but your brain will get you in trouble very quickly. So just even thinking that is is being self-righteous, and it's just all screwy. It's a human carnal viewpoint. You can't earn, you can't make yourself perfect. Yes, we should be striving to become perfect as our Father in heaven is perfect. That's what Christ said. But will we be perfect as human beings? No. But we can be striving to go in that direction, and we can become more and more like God. And I'm sure that you've seen that growth in yourself through the years, and I'm also sure that you've seen, been disappointed with yourself a lot of times. So, just don't fall into that trap of thinking that you can earn salvation, because it ain't going to happen. Only way we can have salvation is through Christ's sacrifice, which we accept as a result of repenting of what we are, and Christ gives that to us. It is a gift. Okay? But it also says that if we've been living this way, we have to stop living the wrong way, and we have to start living the right way. You can't keep going in this direction and be a Christian. That the two do not go together. So when we recognize we've done something wrong, well, then we need to repent and quit. Okay, there is something then, as I mentioned already, and I won't read this whole thing, but different about the mind of someone who keeps the Sabbath. It is that mind is open to obeying God and wanting to learn more and more. It is awfully warm in here. Really warm. I don't know if anybody knows how to turn it down, but whew, it's cooking me. Okay. And I can see it's getting to a few other folks too. It's very comfortable to nod off in this situation. All right. I, of course, it couldn't be my speaking. I would do that. Wouldn't be the problem. All right. There, we also have some examples, and once again, I'll just refer to these because we don't have time to read all these scriptures. But on this day, we are commanded to rest from our labors in the worship of God. And let me give you a number of scriptures. Of course, Exodus 20, verses 8 through 11, which are the Ten Commandments. Genesis 2:2, we've already referred to the fact that God set that aside. He rested, and we need to follow that example. And then Exodus 16, 28 through 30, that no work should be done, and he fleshes out, if you want to use the term do's and don'ts on the Sabbath. Nehemiah 13, 15 through 18, that they, as a result of profaning the Sabbath, they received the wrath from God on Israel because they ignored it. And they, I mean, this is nothing new. People have pushed aside the Sabbath through history over and over and over. And then when God removed his blessing and they received whatever came with being disobedient to God's law, and they got captured or whatever, and then they repented and they cried out to God, God would come and save them and answer. But it was due to the fact that they just slipped away from God and put his way of life aside. They quit following. They came up with ideas in their own mind of, oh, well, we don't have to do this. It's not important. I have more important things to do. Before you knew it, they were bringing the, you know, money changers into the temple. Well, you're going to be giving offerings here, right? And you may not have the exact change you need. And we're right here. In case you need to buy an offering, we've got the turtle doves here, and we've got whatever you need. And we'll just set right up there, right inside the temple, so that it's real convenient. Of course, we'll make a little money on it. This did not make Christ very happy when he went into the temple and the money changers were profaning God's sanctuary there. That's the way human nature works. Pretty soon, it goes from one step to the next, and, well, this is okay, then it's going to be the next thing, and pretty soon you're out in left field someplace, and Let's put it this way. Christ got their attention when he tipped their tables over and drove them out of the temple. I don't know if they learned anything from it, but they were awakened to the fact that there was something going on there. They weren't going in the right direction. So, very important that we realize that God is not pleased if we aren't obeying what he says to do. I mean, he went out of his way to make the Sabbath, and if we don't obey it, obviously it's not going to make the Father and Jesus Christ pleased. All right, next aspect we want to look at is the teachings and example of Jesus Christ. And I'm going to give you four scriptures here of examples. Matthew, the 5th chapter. Let's just read that one, Matthew 5, and we'll look in verse 17. I love this because it is so specific, but people twist it around. I mean, it's just unbelievable. Because they can't read the Bible for what it says, they want to twist it and make it say something that it doesn't say. But it's very simple. Verse 17, Matthew 5, it says, "Don't think." So that's exactly what the world does. They think that he came to destroy the law. Christ said, "Look, don't think that I've come to destroy the law or the prophets. I am not come to destroy, but to fulfill or to expand." And he added all the spiritual principles to the Ten Commandments. Not just the letter of the law any longer, but now the spirit of the law, the way we think, which was really the whole purpose for Christ's coming. Not only, not the whole purpose, but a great deal of it is to teach people that we needed to think or repent of what we are, not just what we have done. That's the key of it. Okay, so he said, "Don't think that I've come to destroy it." Everybody thinks that he did and says that he did. Oh, that doesn't really mean that. "For truly I say to you, till heaven and earth pass away, not one period, not one comma will be removed from the law until it all be fulfilled." Okay, so there's no, it's very, very clear. And part of the law of God is the Sabbath. And it was goes all the way back to the beginning. That's in Matthew 5, and you can also write down Matthew 7 and verses 21 through 23, Matthew 19, verse 17, Mark 7, 7 through 8. Now those are the teachings and examples of the teachings of Christ, and then there is the personal example of, in Luke 4 and verse 16. It says he went into the synagogue, as his custom was. In other words, the way he'd always done it. This is how Christ lived. And he said to follow, or Peter said to follow in his footsteps. Okay. Also the apostles in Acts the 13th chapter in verses 42 through 44. These were examples of the apostles keeping the Sabbath and the holy days, Acts 17, verse 2, and also Acts 18, verse 4. And then there is this scripture in Hebrews 4 and verse 9 that talks about there remains therefore a rest or a keeping of the Sabbath or a seventh-day Sabbath for the people of God. And people argue about that. Oh, it doesn't really mean that, but that's pretty clear. It does refer to the future rest, but it does also specifically refer to the Sabbath day. Okay, to summarize, this is the summary of our belief. First of all, it is written literally in stone. These Ten Commandments were written in stone by God's own hand. It is as immutable as it can be. It was set apart from the time of creation, set aside for us to observe. And God blessed the Sabbath, he sanctified it, and he rested from all of his works on that day. The Sabbath was a day after creation, as we've discussed, an ordained time for man to focus on his close relationship, personal relationship with his maker. And that goes back, which we've already referred to, Genesis the 2nd chapter and verses 2 and 3. Now let's go to Mark the 2nd chapter. We're already there in Matthew, Mark 2, and we'll read what I've already quoted to you verbally. Because in verse 28, it says something very important. Christ is the Lord of the Sabbath. First, he said in verse 27 that the Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. Big difference. And verse 28, therefore the Son of Man is Lord also of the Sabbath. He's in charge of it. He is the one who presides over the Sabbath. When we come to services, and anybody who's given sermonettes or sermons or been part of the service has seen how God has directed the subjects when neither one of us, you know, how the sermonette a lot of times will fit perfectly with the sermon and so on and so forth. Believe me, God is the one who guides and directs the church, and he is very deeply involved personally in the way things go on the Sabbath at services. He, wherever two or three people are gathered together, God's there. And he is. And he does do it. He takes care of his people. Now, if you aren't interested, you know, maybe you're a teenager and you can hardly wait, you know, for the sermon to get over so you can talk with your friends. Unfortunately, that's normal. But eventually, as young people grow older and they mature, they come to a point where they realize they have to make some decisions for themselves, and they begin to listen and pay more attention. And I will tell you, parents, having been a teenager, young person, little kid, growing up in the church myself, they hear more than you know. They may be coloring or whatever, but you will be shocked in the certain circumstances come up, and they say, oh, the minister said such and such. He did? You know, you're surprised that he was listening or she was listening to it. There's more gets in the brain than you realize, and that's a good thing. So it's always exciting to see, especially young people, when they finally come to that point in their life and they begin to come to the point where they need to, or they know they need to decide which way they're going to go in life. And that's a very pleasant experience. Okay. So it's important that we understand that Christ is the Lord of the Sabbath. And then, and I gave a sermonette here a few weeks ago about Isaiah 58, verses 13 and 14, how to keep the Sabbath. So I'm not going to go ahead and reiterate that. But the principles are, you put aside all the normal things that you are and I are involved in. You take a rest from it. Put it aside. Don't let yourself think about it, because that is included in those three steps. You don't want to be letting yourself dwell on all these physical things. You want to give yourself a rest. Separate. Be free from the everyday stuff. And you have to work at that, because when I used to do a lot of traveling and I was under a great deal of pressure in business, I would come home on Friday night and my brain was running 1,000 miles an hour reviewing all these things. And it took me quite a few hours, sometimes just sitting in the chair, everybody else went to bed, trying to get my brain to slow down and to put these things aside and to give my mind a rest. That's just humanly the way it is. And we need to have a rest, and we have to work at it. Because if you don't diligently work at trying to put these things aside when they start coming to mind, say, wait a minute, I can't worry about that right now. I have to wait 24 hours, then I can start worrying again about these things. But you just have to give yourself a rest. Now start focusing on God's way. Enjoy the benefit of fellowship. I know everybody enjoys coming to church, not only for the sermon and the services, but believe me, fellowshipping together on the Sabbath is, in my opinion, as important as the church services themselves, because we strengthen one another. And I'll tell you something else that I've seen when in years past we've done open houses and so on. If the church itself has turmoil within it, it is not going to be ready to nurture anybody new that God is calling. And other ministers have learned the same lesson. But if the church is bonded closely, if they're unified, if they're brothers and sisters, if they're ready to serve other people, not having infighting among themselves, but really bonded closely together as brethren need to be, when a new person comes in, the minister can only help and serve that person up to a certain degree. All of you really nurture them more ultimately even than what the minister does, because it's your example and your encouragement and your friendship and warmth and love and so on that really help and support that new person. I've watched this. We had a couple of open houses there in Philadelphia, and we had some new people there, and I can't remember all the details. I just know that that our people were still visiting with these new people in the parking lot, till many, many hours after services. They went out to lunch with them, and then they came back to the car, and they were still talking at like 4, 5, 6 o'clock late in the afternoon. So it is exciting to see, and it's not that you're there to preach to them, but you are there to be a support and to nurture and to encourage and just be their friend. And that aspect of ministering to one another is way more important than you may realize. And just your example, think about this. You're a new person. You walk into a church congregation. You don't know what you're going to find. Some of you thought when you heard about the truth, and I've heard this example, you heard about the truth at first, and you imagined that when you came into this group of people, that everybody in this church was going to be perfect, right? And you were in for a surprise. Of course, you could look in the mirror and realize, well, now I'm in the church and I'm not perfect, so how can I expect everybody else to be? Obviously, we're not perfect. But a lot of times, new people have that expectation. And they look to your example in a very, very serious way. Because think about it. You walk in, you're looking around. Now, thankfully, we had some of our Spanish brethren, and they will be hearing the translation here in a minute. They sent two of their representatives to come and visit us to begin with. And they were positively impressed. This is when we were still over in the school and much smaller. And they just came up. They asked if they could come to church. They called Mr. Fay. Yes. And so they came. They listened. They visited. They came up to Mr. Fay. And next week, there will be more. And there were. And there are. And that's an exciting thing. Why were they impressed? Well, they saw the fruits. They didn't see us being perfect, but they saw God's Spirit, God's way of life, and they were positively, from a spiritual point of view, pleased. And that's a very, very inspiring story. And I've told that story to many other people in the church in conversation, and I'm very, very pleased with that. So your example is very important on this, at church, here on the Sabbath. You're visiting, you're bonding together. Extremely important to be a family. This gives us the strength that we need. And this is part of the reason for having services, is the fellowship. You can't pray for one another. If you have problems, you have difficulties, how can you pray for one another if you don't even know what the other person's problems are? You can't do it. So you have to fellowship. That's part of, in order to bear one another's burdens, you have to have communication so you know what those burdens are. And that's part of the service and getting together. Okay, the other factor we've already talked about, we read Exodus 31, it's a sign between us and God. very, very important son. Now, it's not a saving thing, but it is definitely a sign. And the sign comes, as I said before, we're willing to listen to God. And we come here to see what he has to say and how we can leave with more understanding. It's going to be kept in the future. In Isaiah 66 and verse 23, it's going to be kept in the kingdom of God. And there's going to be regular services and worshiping and serving God on the Sabbath. You know, in Zechariah 14, towards the end of the chapter, the holy days are referenced, and they're going to be kept in the millennium. And the truth of the Sabbath of rest remains for all of mankind. And again, they reference here Hebrews, the 4th chapter and verse 9, again, that there remains a rest for the people of God. Well, then finally, we come down to the fact that the examples of the Apostle Paul taught the Gentiles on the Sabbath. Now, when the Gentiles came to Paul and said, we want to hear more, that was Paul's perfect opportunity to tell him, well, we don't have to meet on the Sabbath. We can meet some other day. But he met with them again the next Sabbath and continued to teach them. Just a simple example of the fact that Paul believed in keeping the Sabbath. They followed the law of God and the example of Jesus Christ. And that was in Acts 13, verses 42 through 44, if you'd like to make a reference on that. And he also established churches that kept the Sabbath. And you would find that in Acts, the 17th chapter, in verse 2, and also Acts 18 and verse 4. The whole book of Acts is filled with really inspiring examples of the apostles keeping the holy days, the Sabbath, making reference to, I've got to be in Jerusalem for so-and-so holy day. It's a very clear thing. It was just an understood thing. Everybody understood you're supposed to keep the Sabbath and the holy days. The thing I'd like to kind of end with is the fact that there has not been any change by the example of Jesus Christ, by the example of the apostles, whose example, of course, we need to be following. There's been no change in the Sabbath or the holy days from the very beginning. It's always stayed the same. The seven-day cycle, the calendar. People have asked me about the calendar. People get all fouled up on the calendar, okay? And they come up with this technical thing and that technical thing. I have read and studied papers on it. I can't do it today, but I have worked the calendar when I was in college. That was one of our assignments. And this thing of having a month change, you know, where we have to... I can't remember the term for it now. I've forgotten the technical term. Maybe Brian remembers. But we have a shift every so many years. Because if you don't have that month change, and you and some people say, oh, no, you have to keep doing it this way, and you're keeping it on the wrong day. No, we aren't. Because if you follow that out, eventually you're going to be way off the beam. It doesn't show up right away, but eventually as you continue to calculate, that theory falls on its face, and I've forgotten what the other twist was that some people put on it, and that also fails. And it's very clear, and the research has proven that. So God has preserved that calendar. He's done it through the Jews. He gave them that responsibility, and we are keeping the holy days and the Sabbath and so on at the proper times. We weren't keeping Pentecost on the right day for many years in the past. And it was because we, I always laugh about this, when God gives us something to count, we mess it up. You count 50 days and then keep that. And we messed it up because we didn't understand what the word from was interpreted. And once we understood what the interpretation, how to count from the proper way, it was clear. It couldn't be on Monday. But prior to not understanding that, it couldn't be on Sunday. So once we understood the proper interpretation of that word, then it couldn't be on any other day except Sunday. But did God curse us for that? No, because you heard in the sermonette, we did the best that we understood. at the time, and once we understood the right thing, we changed. And some people still keep it on Monday. They just wouldn't accept that change. And one thing that Mr. Armstrong always said, that the true church of God will be continuing to grow and to change and to learn. Do you know the Bible 100,000%? Do you think you understand everything in the Bible? That you could not ever learn anything new? Well, that's ridiculous, of course. We're going to be learning things new every time. Every time you and I read the Bible, even if we've read over those same scriptures over and over, you read it and you go, oh, I never saw that there before. We're always learning new things. And if we ever stop learning, I don't mean coming up with new doctrines, and as the Bible talks about, people have itching ears and they want to hear new things. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about learning more fully how to obey God and how to do exactly what he says and to become more like Jesus Christ and God the Father, not concocting new technical doctrines that twist the truth. And a lot of people have done that, and they've fallen into that trap, and the Bible says watch out for that, because they'll come up with their own ideas and they aren't right. They say stick to what you know is correct and what you can prove out of the Bible. But we still should be learning and continuing to examine ourselves, and we should be grateful, really grateful, that God has given us the Sabbath day, that we can rest once a week, that we can separate ourselves from the world, we can come here with an open mind, and we can let God teach us, and we are willing to listen to what God has to say and to learn and change. And that's what the Sabbath should represent for us.